shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Good afternoon. This is Alex Kuzma from the Ukrainian Catholic Education Foundation, sitting in for Father Anthony on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. It's my pleasure to be here, to be with you once again, and I'm very grateful to our friend Armand Chabatari for this great opportunity. I want to bring you greetings from the Ukrainian Catholic University in Lviv, Ukraine, which is located near the Polish border in the westernmost region of Ukraine, and also from the Ukrainian Catholic Education Foundation that's working to build our church both here in the United States and in Eastern Europe, and to bring greetings on behalf of the Ukrainian Catholic community of the USA. Over the course of today's program, I'll be sharing with you much of the good news that's actually coming from Ukraine in terms of the growth of our church, the vibrancy of our Ukrainian Catholic University, the first and so far only Catholic university in the former Soviet Union, and also to share with you some of the heroic history of our church, which has undergone tremendous persecution throughout the 20th century and is now beginning to come out of that period of persecution, actually restoring a powerful community of faith that is stretching across various borders and is bringing inspiration throughout the world. If any of you are interested in learning more about UKU, our Ukrainian Catholic University, or our foundation, I invite you to visit www.ucef, that's ucharlieedwardfrank.org, for more information. As we begin today's program, we're very mindful of the fact that this is the beginning of the Great Lent. Earlier this week, Ukrainian Catholics and Ukrainian Orthodox began to mark this important and solemn period in our church's calendar with Lenten services beginning on Monday. I know most of our Roman Catholic brethren begin with Ash Wednesday, and sadly, it's difficult for us to begin today's program because we're all very mindful as our nation is still reeling from the tragedy at Parkland High School in Florida. As the father of a 14-year-old girl, I have to tell you that this tragedy hit me especially hard, especially as I remember the beautiful but painful photo, an icon of a young mother clutching her daughter, her forehead still marked by the ashes from Ash Wednesday, and her face etched with agony and relief that her daughter had survived this tragedy, but also mourning and grieving for the many children and the heroic teachers that were slain by this deranged individual. I don't want to dwell too much on this, but I think it's really important for all of us as Catholics, as Christians, echo what President Trump said yesterday, that we must support mental health programs. We should restore funding for these mental health programs that can help our troubled young people. And we must find practical ways to keep guns out of the hands of deranged individuals. But I do want to share some of the encouraging news that's coming out of Ukraine right now. As many of you know from those of you who have followed events in Ukraine since 2013, 2014, Ukraine has gone through a remarkable transformation. Our church, as you know, went through a terrible period of persecution throughout much of the 20th century. In eastern Ukraine, the Ukrainian Orthodox Church was virtually liquidated by the Soviet Union. And in western Ukraine, our church did survive, partly with the help of the Vatican, and we were able to maintain very close ties to the Vatican that preserved our church up until 1945. But as at the end of World War II, Joseph Stalin, the despot of the Soviet Union, tried to dismantle our church, and he was quite effective to a great degree. He called together a false synod of bishops, and he basically gave our bishops and archbishops and what the mafia would call an offer you can't refuse, that either they would merge with the Russian Orthodox Church, which at that time was heavily compromised and infiltrated by the NKVD, the Soviet secret police, or they would be executed or sent to Siberia. And our priests and our bishops heroically defied this ultimatum and said, we'll take Siberia. We will take a martyr's death over collaboration with the forces of evil in the Soviet Union. And so even our Archbishop Major, Yosef Slipey, the successor to our heroic Metropolitan Archbishop Andrei Sheptytsky, decided that he would go to Siberia, and he was, along with many of his brother bishops, was sent to some of the most brutal camps in the Soviet Gulag. He endured 18 years of torture and hard labor in the frozen north of Siberia. But in 1963, a miracle happened. And very often in Ukraine, we say that some of the greatest tragedies, we can sometimes still pluck a wonderful miracle from even the greatest tragedies. And that's what happened in 1963, as the United States and the Soviet Union realized that they had come perilously close to a nuclear exchange over the Cuban Missile Crisis. Nikita Khrushchev, the premier of the Soviet Union, and President John Kennedy, together in collaboration with St. John the 23rd, the Pope of Rome, decided to negotiate an exchange of prisoners. And for some Soviet in exchange for several Soviet spies, Khrushchev regime agreed to release Joseph Slipey, the Archbishop Major. And he, at that time, the Soviets were convinced that they had worked him over to the degree that he would not be an effective leader of our church. He had been severely tortured. His hands had been broken and beaten. But when he came to Rome and was warmly received by St. John the 23rd and by his brother cardinals, Cardinal Slipey, he eventually became a cardinal, showed that he was actually a force of nature. And miraculously, he came out of that experience in Siberia. And for the next 20 years, until he died in 1984, he helped to rebuild our church in the West, in the United States, in Canada, in Great Britain, in France, in Argentina, and in many other countries, in Australia. And it was his glimmer of a vision that he wanted to create a Ukrainian Catholic university. And under his tutelage, my current boss, Bishop Boris Gudziak, a native of Syracuse, New York, and a Harvard graduate, a brilliant historian, began to study with Cardinal Slipey in the early 1980s. He would go to Rome and he would come back. I was actually a good friend of Bishop Boris's. At that time, he was just Boris. He was a layperson, a young, brilliant graduate student at Harvard. And he would come back and tell my friends in our choir that, the cardinal was convinced that our church is going to come out of the underground. And our church is going to help in the restoration of Ukrainian independence. And he believes that the Pope of Rome will eventually come to Ukraine. All of us were, as you might imagine, in the early 1980s, there was no hint of perestroika or glasnost or any of the eventual reforms that led to the collapse of the Soviet Union. So as much as we respected Boris for his vision and his optimism, it was really, really hard for us to believe. And yet, if our listeners can think about it, from 1984, from the point where Cardinal Slipey died, within just 5 years, we witnessed the collapse of the Berlin Wall, In 1990, our church came out of the underground after 40 years of persecution. Ukraine achieved its independence and the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991. And St. John Paul II, as Pope of Rome, came to Kiev in Ukraine and to Lviv, to our home city, in 2001 and drew the largest crowds in Ukrainian history. Over 1 million people came out to hear his both his Latin Rite Mass and his Eastern Rite Mass that he celebrated with really over 1 million people in Western Ukraine. So all of these miracles happened, and I think we need to thank our good Lord for his providence and for his ability to work miracles, even in the bleakest of times. We're very proud of that legacy, and out of that legacy, we're now seeing a church that has gone through a remarkable revival. In 1990, when our bishops and priests came out of the underground with the help of then Mikhail Gorbachev, and at that time with, of course, the help of St. John Paul II, there were only 300 priests left, and most of these were physically broken men, people who had endured terrible torture along with their Archbishop Joseph Slipay. Yet out of that tiny remnant of 300 priests with an average age of 78, we've now seen our church grow to over 3,000 priests, and our seminaries are packed. They're filled to the brim. And our churches, we would invite any of our listeners to come to Ukraine, either Kyiv or Lviv or Lutsk or any of the beautiful historic cities that you really should visit at least once in your lifetime. I would recommend everybody put it on their bucket list to see you, to see Kyiv. It's a spectacular city that was established on the banks of the Dnipro River by St. Andrew, one of the apostles, way back in the first century of our Christ's rule. And also to visit Lviv, where our university is based. You would be warmly welcomed. Lviv is a gorgeous city that was, much of it was built still in the 15th century and then rebuilt during the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It's a city of gorgeous cobblestone streets, narrow walkways, wonderful cafes, boutiques, restaurants. So we would invite all of you to come and visit this. And if you can't quite get to Ukraine, we would also invite our listeners in Chicagoland to come visit our Ukrainian Catholic Church, whether it's St. Nicholas Cathedral on Oakley Avenue, North Oakley, or Saints Volodymyr and Olha Church, or St. Joseph the Betrothed out near O'Hare Airport. You will witness beautiful liturgies sung completely in English or Ukrainian, and you'll get a chance to flavor the gorgeous traditions that even the Soviets were not able to exterminate from our community. And what's exciting is that our church really has also seen a revival also of its liturgical tradition. There's a lot of new music that's being written by talented young composers. And we're also seeing not only the ranks of our priests growing, but also a whole new generation of young nuns, many of whom are organizing spectacular programs to help women in need and widows and orphans and helping to create centers of mercy and battered women's shelters. So we're very proud of this tradition. And after our next break, I'll be glad to share with you the different ways in which our Ukrainian Catholic University has played a pioneering role in germinating and then helping these traditions and new developments to flourish. Once again, I'm Alex Kuzma from the Ukrainian Catholic Education Foundation, sitting in for Father Anthony on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Koska is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, two blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing. We at Winds of Change thank you for your prayers and financial support. As you have often heard, Winds of Change is listener supported. That means you, and especially now. Please give what you can to help support Winds of Change to stay on the air. Any amount will be greatly appreciated. Simply go to ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And click on the radio button to make your donation to Winds of Change, which will be a tremendous blessing. Thank you.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Saving Jews from the Holocaust
in a wheelchair.
And now, a Sheptytsky Institute Minute with Father Peter Galadze.
Archbishop Andrei Sheptytsky was born in 1865 in western Ukraine. He was an aristocrat who gave up his wealth to become a monk. He then led the Greco-Catholic Church in Ukraine through two world wars. Exiled to Russia for 3 years during World War I, Sheptytsky never again enjoyed good health. From 1929 until his death in 1944, he worked from a wheelchair. From that wheelchair, Sheptytsky coordinated efforts to save hundreds of Jews during the Holocaust. Next time, we'll tell you more about the Archbishop, who at the height of the Holocaust wrote, "A lack of love is the source of every hardship and misery. Love is the very substance of all of God's revelation."
To learn about degree programs in Eastern Christian Studies, visit sheptytskyinstitute.ca. That's S-H-E-P-T-Y-T-S-K-Y, institute.ca.
Премудрість, прості.
Good afternoon. This is Alex Kuzma sitting in for Father Anthony on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. I'm bringing you greetings on behalf of the Ukrainian Catholic Education Foundation and the Ukrainian Catholic University in Lviv, Ukraine. During our earlier segment, I shared with you some of the exciting news and really the miraculous recovery and growth of our church. For those of you who are interested in learning more about Ukraine, I would urge you to pick up a wonderful book. It's a groundbreaking work called Bloodlands, in which Yale historian Timothy Snyder describes the region encompassing eastern Poland, Ukraine, and Belarus as the area of Europe that suffered the greatest loss of life in the 20th century. Not only was this region enveloped in some of the bloodiest battles of the two world wars, the Russian Revolution and the Civil War, but this area was also ground zero for the Holocaust, the Ukrainian terror famine of 1932 and 33, the Stalin purges and massive deportations that led to the deaths of tens of millions of civilians, mostly Ukrainians. Throughout this past century, the Ukrainian Catholic Church played a heroic role in resisting tyranny, defending the Catholic faith and the dignity of the human person against almost insurmountable odds. As my good friend, Father Peter Galadze, just mentioned during his presentation about the Sheptytsky Institute, it's worth really dwelling on the heroic witness of Metropolitan Andrei Sheptytsky. This is a man that really should be recognized throughout the world as one of the great visionaries and heroes, like Mahatma Gandhi or Martin Luther King or St. John Paul II. St. John Paul II often said that our church breathes with two lungs, the eastern lung and the western lung. Our Roman Catholic Church and our Ukrainian Catholic Church are in full communion. And these churches have played a heroic role. As Father Galadze mentioned, the predominantly Catholic region of western Ukraine was under Polish rule from the beginning of the 1900s through 1945. And yet, when the Nazis invaded in 1941, the head of the Ukrainian Catholic Church, Andrei Sheptytsky, denounced the Nazis, and he ordered the clergy and monastic orders to shelter their Jewish neighbors. Shaptitsky, along with his brother, Blessed Abbot Clement of the Unyev Monastery, are personally credited with saving the lives of hundreds of Jewish children and adults. And Andrei Shaptitsky was posthumously honored by the Anti-Defamation League in October of 2013 for his heroism in sheltering Jews during the Holocaust. I also wanted to recommend a wonderful book that I just read recently. This would be especially of interest to our Polish Catholic listeners, but also our Ukrainian Catholics. The book Irena's Children, Irene's Children, by Tilar Matseo, is a spectacularly heroic and harrowing book about Irena Sendler, Irene Sendler, who is credited with saving the lives of over 2,000 Jewish children that she smuggled out of the Warsaw ghetto at the height of the Nazi occupation. This book, really, I can't even describe this book to you without feeling, a chill up my spine, because really the heroism that was required of these people who sheltered their Jewish brothers and sisters and their children, they were running a daily risk of execution and torture and beatings. And this is really some of the heroic history of our Catholic Church that needs to be shared with many more people. However, I don't want to dwell on the brutal past completely today. I want to really focus on what's been happening in the Ukrainian Catholic Church since it came out of the underground in 1990. As I mentioned in the previous segment, our church grew from a tiny remnant of only 300 mostly elderly priests to over 3,000 priests today. In just 25 years, our church has witnessed a spectacular transformation, and the ranks of our nuns and our lay activists has also grown. And much of this growth, I think, can be attributed to the pioneering work of the Ukrainian Catholic University, created by Bishop Boris Gudziak, a native of Syracuse, New York, and a lifelong ardent Catholic who studied at Harvard and Syracuse University. Bishop Boris, then only Boris Gudziak, he was only a layperson when he came to Ukraine in 1990. He began to collect the personal histories of thousands of Ukrainian Catholics that lived out their faith in the underground, sometimes having to celebrate baptisms and liturgies in the forests or in private homes or in shelters that were out of sight of the Soviet authorities. And he was so inspired by these people that he came back to the United States and decided that he would start from scratch to create first an institute of church history in Ukraine that would document and verify these people. And his work and the work of hundreds of researchers and historians came to fruition in 2001, when then Pope John Paul II, now Saint John Paul II, came to Ukraine in June of 2001 and beatified 28 of these martyrs and saints, people that had suffered and died under the Nazis. For instance, Father Omelian Koch, who refused to leave the Flossenbürg death camps because he was ministering not only to his fellow Catholics, but also to Jews and Gypsies and even atheists. And when his family tried to bribe the Nazi officials to get him out of the concentration, he told them, "Do not mourn for me. This is where I see the face of God, in the faces of all of these condemned prisoners." And he died a martyr's death together with the Gypsies and Jews and even the non-believers that he felt may have been redeemed within the last days of their life. So it's people like this that we really need to honor and to learn more about them as we study the heroism of our church. And I want to invite those of you who are listening and would like to learn more about the Ukrainian Catholic Church to visit our website at ucef.org. That's ucharlieedwardfrank.org. If you're inspired by the witness of these heroes and martyrs, I invite you to make an online donation to the Ukrainian Catholic University that is documenting the lives and history of many, many more. Those 28 were just the tiny tip of the iceberg of the thousands of people that sacrificed their lives to keep our church alive. So I encourage you to visit this website. and to learn more about these individuals. I also want to let you know that our current rector of our university, Father Bohdan Prach, who grew up in Poland and is now the leader of our university, also recently issued a spectacular two-volume set where he documents the lives and heroism of hundreds of Ukrainian Catholic priests and their families, because for those of you who don't know, in our Eastern Rite Church, we do have a number of married clergy. It was approved by the Vatican, so we wanted to share that with you. But we're excited about the fact that Father Prach has now documented the lives of these hundreds of priests. Most of this, he just concentrated on one region or one county of Ukraine, the Peremyshl eparchy, or the Pshemyshl, as our Polish brethren would call it, and also from the region of Lemkivshchina, the Lemko region of the Carpathian Mountains. So we're very, very grateful for Father Prach, who actually accessed and got declassified Soviet files that verified the fate of these many priests that were executed or that perished in Siberia, and the handful that survived and came back to Ukraine to help rebuild our church. Today, though, I also wanted to share with you some of the exciting things that are happening at the Ukrainian Catholic University. We started out as a seminary, the Holy Spirit Seminary in Lviv, Ukraine. L-V-I-V is the spelling of our city, city of lions, and certainly a city of lion-hearted people that withstood persecution for many decades. But our university now has grown to include everything from theology and humanities and classics programs. Our students are all required to learn at least one classic language, whether Latin or Greek or Hebrew, and Church Slavonic, and at least one modern language. Our instruction, much of our instruction is in English, because Bishop Boris wanted our students all to be well-versed in international languages. And we also have a business school that's been recognized by Financial Times as really a pioneering school that is helping to instill good corporate ethics and social responsibility in the minds and hearts of our business students. And we're now seeing that many of our alumni are actually getting involved and becoming philanthropists. Now, those that have been able to acquire a little bit of wealth or modest wealth, and also that they're creating a culture of philanthropy. Last year in Kyiv itself, we had a wonderful celebration where hundreds of Ukrainian business leaders helped to raise over $400,000 for our university. And that may not sound like a lot for those of you who know how much money Loyola or DePaul raise each year, but believe me, in Ukraine, this was really a remarkable achievement. And I wanted to share a very exciting development that next month, in the middle of March, a wonderful organization called Life Perspectives will be coming to Ukraine to provide training for social workers, psychologists, chaplains, pastoral counselors, to help families that may have suffered the loss of a child, whether to miscarriage or early infant death, and also to provide counseling and healing for families that may be experiencing the loss of a child through abortion, and urging them to understand that decision and to begin to develop a stronger reverence for life. As many of you know, in the Soviet Union, sadly, abortion was the preferred means of birth control. And for many years, we had women in Ukraine and Russia and Poland, that many of whom had 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 abortions in a lifetime, which you can just imagine how that had an impact on their own bodies. The little bit of reassurance I can give our listeners is that the abortion rate has gone down substantially in the last 10 to 15 years, again, partly through the influence of the Ukrainian Catholic Church and the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. We have to give credit to our Orthodox brethren also for raising these important issues. But we're excited that Life Perspectives, based in San Diego, is going to be bringing their experts and providing very in-depth training to these counselors to help with these families. And now, as Ukraine begins to, well, as you know, Ukraine has gone through a very trying period for the last 4 years since the invasion of Crimea and the invasion of eastern Ukraine, the Donbas region, by Russian troops and Russian separatists. Many families have now lost loved ones, young soldiers that have died on the front lines, and civilians that have had their homes bombed and may have lost their lives through bombings or landmines. And so this program of grief counseling is very, very important and timely to help widows and orphans and some of our wounded veterans to also cope with post-traumatic stress and to understand how they can heal themselves and heal their family members as time goes on. So we're very excited that at the Ukrainian Catholic University, our Institute of Family and Marriage, our Institute of Social Pedagogy, our bioethics program, and our women's studies program have all joined forces to bring these very talented young trainers to develop stronger programs in this regard. Before we go on, I just wanted to say once again, I'm Alex Kuzma, sitting in for Father Anthony on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Have you ever heard of a Byzantine Catholic? Hello, I am Father Thomas J. Loya with an Eastern Christian Moment. Pope John Paul II said that the Church must breathe with both its lungs, East and West. The Catholic Church is composed of various rites and jurisdictions within these rites. The Byzantine Rite is one of the rites from the Eastern Lung of the Catholic Church. The Latin Rite is a rite of the Western Lung of the Catholic Church. Over time, tensions arose between the two lungs of the Church, and they finally split from each other in 1054 AD. The Western Lung became known as the Roman Catholic Church, or Latin Rite, and it was centered in Rome. The Eastern Lung became known as the Eastern Orthodox Churches, and they had four centers: Alexandria, Constantinople, Antioch, and Jerusalem. Beginning in the 15th century, parts of the Eastern Orthodox Churches and the Latin Rite began reuniting again, thus creating what we know today as the Eastern Catholic Churches. To find out more about the Eastern Lung of the Church, go to EasternChristianMedia.com.
Good afternoon. This is Alex Kuzma from the Ukrainian Catholic Education Foundation sitting in for Father Anthony on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. You just heard a short excerpt from the cherubic hymn from the Eastern Rite Liturgy, the Liturgy of St. John Chrysostom, sung by the Stritnya Choir of the Ukrainian Catholic University. Today, I'm honored and pleased to bring you the good news of the growth and revival and spectacular rehabilitation of the Ukrainian Catholic Church. Our university is currently the only Catholic university in the former Soviet Union, but it has witnessed a tenfold increase in the ranks of our clergy that have grown from a mere 300 priests that came out of the underground in the Gulag to 3,000 priests today. This stands in direct and dramatic contrast to what we've all seen in Western Europe, where sadly many churches are virtually empty, even on high holidays. That's not the case in Ukraine. I would invite our listeners to visit Ukraine. If you're going, many people I know often travel to Warsaw or Prague or Vienna or Croatia to Split on their summer vacations. Ukraine is just a short hop, skip, and a jump, less than 2 hours flight from any of these cities. And Lviv, the city where our Ukrainian university, our Catholic university is based, is often compared to a miniature Prague or a miniature Krakow. It's maintained a lot of its beautiful medieval architecture with narrow streets and cobblestones and romantic cafes. It's a wonderful place for Valentine's Day if you ever wanted to bring your sweetheart or your wife to see this beautiful city. Sadly, Ukraine has been on the front lines of an epic struggle between Western civilization and the forces of evil or forces of barbarism. Ukraine, as you know, experienced the brunt of two world wars and the Soviet purges. In 1932 and 1933, Joseph Stalin, the tyrant of the Soviet Union, decided to punish the Ukrainian people for their resistance to his collectivization campaign. And he starved anywhere between 6 million and 10 million Ukrainians and Kuban Cossacks. Many of these were ethnic Ukrainians, too, that were living in the lower regions of the Volga River in Russia. But many of these were actually ethnic Ukrainians, so that even the exception proves the rule that Stalin really wanted to punish the Ukrainian people for their determination to preserve their culture and their faith. There's a new book out called Red Harvest by Anne Applebaum, who's a Polish scholar and biographer. Anne also wrote a spectacular, you might say, a definitive book on the Gulag, and it's called Red Harvest. And I would encourage our listeners to read this book about how the Ukrainians withstood this terrible carnage. Unfortunately, history repeats itself, and Ukrainians have found that even after they regained their independence in 1991, they've had to reassert their rights to democracy and freedom and human dignity. In 2004, virtually our entire student body from the Ukrainian Catholic University traveled to Kiev for what was then called the Orange Revolution, when Vladimir Putin tried to impose his own puppet government under Viktor Yanukovych. The Ukrainian people rose up against him, and nearly a million people rose up and held a general strike to overturn the results of the fraudulent results of that election. History repeated itself again, sadly, in 2013, after Yanukovych had been elected in 2010. He began not exactly a reign of terror, but certainly he began to tighten the screws on Ukrainian democracy. And over the course of 3 years in power, he began to curtail freedoms and institute a system of mafia justice and corruption that was exposed by investigative journalists, some of whom now teach at our Ukrainian Catholic University's School of Journalism. And when Yanukovych reneged on his pledge to join the European Union, once again, Ukrainians rose up against that betrayal. And again, hundreds of our students and our faculty came to Kiev and also rallied in Lviv. And they made a heroic choice to defend their human rights and democracy against the forces of evil. Now, you might ask, now, why should I care as a Roman Catholic or an Eastern Rite Catholic? I live in the United States. Why should this history of Ukraine be of any kind of relevance to me? Well, if you've been paying attention to what's been happening in Washington, you might realize that actually what played out in Ukraine just a few years ago is now playing out even in the United States. Just this week, former Senator Dan Coats, a Republican of Indiana who's now the Director of National Intelligence, testified with the top intelligence officials in our government. And he literally said, ladies and gentlemen, our country is under attack. This is a cyber attack that is penetrating virtually every corner of our lives, every public action that's happening in the United States. Vladimir Putin is trying to infiltrate and provoke dissension in our ranks. And they're definitely going to be working very hard. Mike Pompeo, who President Trump appointed as the head of the CIA, recently reported that the Russians are very, very busy trying to penetrate with various bots and cyber warfare and false flags are trying to penetrate even our 2018 midterm elections. It's really sad that at a time when people in Russia are living in abject poverty, that Vladimir Putin is investing vast amounts of money to support various fringe groups, mostly right-wing extremist groups in countries like Hungary and Greece and Austria. We've just seen a very authoritarian candidate elected in Austria, the most suspicious and sort of extreme candidate that Austria has seen since World War II. And Putin would love to unleash more of these kinds of demonic forces to cripple, if not destroy, our democracy, as he's tried to do in Hungary, in Ukraine, and in Poland. We might remember that in the 1990s, this was the same strategy that not Putin at that time, but the folks that were still nostalgic for the old Soviet Empire supported Serbian extremists and nationalists in a mindless war of ethnic cleansing. And this past year, the International Court of Justice finally committed some of the most, the greatest criminals that of Latko Radic and some of the other folks that were responsible for the slaughter of hundreds of thousands of Bosnian and Croatian people. Putin would love nothing more than to see this same kind of tragedy played out in Western Europe to weaken Western alliances. And this is something that our intelligence services have been warning about for some time. Sadly, we've seen that there are a lot of people, even in the U.S. Congress and in our intelligence, not in our intelligence communities, but in our administration, that began to curry favor with some of these individuals. We now know that Paul Manafort Jr., who served as a PR strategist for Viktor Yanukovych in Ukraine, then became the campaign manager for Donald Trump during his campaign. He was eventually removed, but we're now seeing the indictments that are coming down when Paul Manafort is charged with what Special Investigator Robert Mueller has called a conspiracy against the United States, where Manafort received millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, over $75 million that he invested in various offshore accounts in the Seychelles and in Cyprus, in exchange for his pledge to penetrate the highest levels of the American government. He promised Russian oligarchs that he would get into American think tanks, into Congress, and even into the White House. And we've seen how perilously close these agents and operatives have come. This is something that really needs to be investigated. Our investigative bodies in Congress and the FBI and our CIA really need to investigate this so that we can preserve our democracy against this kind of terrible penetration. So we are hopeful, and we're asking for the prayers of Catholics around the world to support Ukraine as it faces not just this kind of cyber warfare, but a very hot war that has erupted in eastern Ukraine. You might remember that in 2014, after the Ukrainians won their Revolution of Dignity, when tens of thousands, really over a million people, rallied in Kiev and they deposed President Viktor Yanukovych, and he fled the country with $50 billion in gold bullion at that time. But Ukrainians began to celebrate, maybe prematurely, because just weeks later, Vladimir Putin sent in the infamous Little Green Men, as you might remember, into Crimea, and they basically annexed by force Crimea, chasing out the indigenous Crimean Tatar population. And then he began a war in the east, in the Donbas region, where they tried to create a breakaway republic in Luhansk and Donetsk region. The Ukrainian army at that time only had 6,000 combat-ready troops against some of Putin's crack troops. And yet, somehow, the Ukrainian people rallied, and even with as poorly armed and poorly trained as they were, they went out to the Eastern Front and fought back against some of Putin's elite troops. And now our Ukrainian army, the Ukrainian armed forces, have grown to over 600,000 troops and are have basically stalemated Putin's offensive and his aggression. And fortunately, last year, the American Congress passed a bill to impose even stiffer sanctions on Vladimir Putin's oligarchs to try to persuade them to stop their war, to remove Russian troops from eastern Ukraine. Unfortunately, we haven't seen all those sanctions enforced, and so we're urging people to call their senators and congresspeople and insist that the administration enforce those sanctions as strongly as possible so that Ukraine can come back to peace, to a state of peace. On the positive side, I'm proud to tell you that some of the alumni of the Ukrainian Catholic University, not only have they gone out to eastern Ukraine to try to provide some solace for the troops and the families that have suffered in this terrible war. We've already lost over 10,000 people in the war in the east, both soldiers and civilians. But our students and alumni have actually created a beautiful network of volunteers in an organization called Build Ukraine Together, Buduymo Ukrainu Razom. Our alumnus, Yuri Didula, has created a wonderful campaign to rebuild the houses that were damaged in the fighting and to build a spirit of reconciliation and public education and community growth. So this is just some of the good news we wanted to share. Again, I'm Alex Kuzma from the Ukrainian Catholic Education Foundation, sitting in for Father Anthony on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Newsflash! This just in, Winds of Change podcast can now be heard on your iPhone and Android phone. Download the TuneIn Radio app and search Winds of Change, and Winds of Change will be right there for your very ears. We now return you to Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Good afternoon. This is Alex Kuzma from the Ukrainian Catholic Education Foundation, sitting in for Father Anthony on listener-supported Winds of Change, AM 750 WNDZ. You've just been listening briefly to the choir Stritnya, comprised of students of the Ukrainian Catholic University, and I'm very pleased to bring you the good news that our Ukrainian Catholic University in the city of Lviv, Ukraine, that's spelled L-V-I-V, has gone through a period of dramatic growth and flourishing. Our church, since it came out of the underground in 1990, and since Ukraine regained its independence in 1991, has seen the growth of our clergy from a mere 300 mostly elderly priests to over 3,000 priests today. If you're inspired by what you've heard today, I urge you to visit our website, UCEF.org, that's UCharlieEdwardFrank.org, to learn more about the Ukrainian Catholic Education Foundation and the Ukrainian Catholic University. As Bishop Boris Gudziak likes to say, we're the last Catholic university in 14 time zones between the Polish border and Japan. You won't find any other Catholic universities, sadly, on this mega continent. So we're asking for your support to help grow our church and to inspire and provide scholarships for more students that are trying to develop a strong program of Catholic ethics in business, journalism, social work, and outreach to the poor. As we begin our Great Lent, Ukrainians throughout the world Have been very, very devoted to a stern and rigorous observance of the Great Lent. Sadly, this week we witnessed a horrible tragedy, and I mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast that as the father of a 14-year-old girl, it was really shocking and devastating for me to see the faces of anguish on those parents, that some of whom were able to clutch their children to their bosoms as they were reunited after this tragedy. But I have to say that at our university, we challenge our students to tackle the hardest issues facing Ukrainian society. And I think we as Catholics need to challenge each other also to counter this cult of death, this culture of death that has resulted in this kind of horrific carnage. Yesterday, as I listened to President Trump and members of Congress talking about this issue, I asked myself, what does an assault rifle, an AR-15, have to do with the gospel of life? In Ukraine, we've seen through the last 3 years, through the last 4 years now, a terrible loss of life. 10,000 people were killed in the war between Ukrainian forces and separatists and Russian troops on the Eastern Front. That's 10,000, people that lost husbands, children, wives. In the United States, in the last year that I checked on this, in 2014, we lost 30,000 people to gun violence. Think about that. That's three times as many people in 1 year as we lost in Ukraine during a war in 4 years. And most of those were actually suicides. And we know what our church has said about our resistance to suicide. So we really need to think long and hard as Catholics. We need to challenge our policymakers to really think about what we can do. We had, during the Reagan years, we had the Brady Bill that required background checks. That bill has been stripped away of any kind of enforcement. And so we need to think, has our love of guns in this country become a new form of idolatry? Do we cherish our assault weapons more than we cherish the lives of our children? And I place that just as a question in this terrible week as we grieve for those terrible losses in Florida. It's something that, Ukrainians are trying to wean themselves off of a culture of death and a cult of death that reigned in Ukraine for decades under the Soviet Union. We all know that Joseph Stalin murdered or ordered the murder of millions of people. When Dr. Raphael Lemkin coined the term genocide at the end of World War II, he was talking about the Holocaust, of course, but he also specifically mentioned the Ukrainian terror famine, Stalin's forced famine, where he starved to death somewhere between 6 and 10 million Ukrainian peasants, farmers, that were merely trying to provide food for their families. And he did this at a time as he was exporting millions of tons of grain to help finance the industrialization of Russia. So that there's no question that he was conscious of it, and his henchmen, Postashev, Kaganovich, and others, all of the Bolsheviks that served under Stalin, knew very well what they were doing. I would urge our listeners to pick up a copy of a brilliant new book that was just released by Anne Applebaum, a Polish historian and scholar. It's called Red Harvest, and this book chronicles the steps that led to the Ukrainian famine of 1932-1933. No genocide happens overnight. In Ukraine, what happened was that Stalin began by executing and arresting and deporting priests and intellectuals and scholars and historians, basically trying to cut off the head of the Ukrainian population. The same thing we saw in the 1930s under Hitler, where he seemed to be a rather benign person when he started. Sure, he had some extreme views as we look back on it now, but many people didn't realize what he was up to, and he tried to co-opt the German Lutheran Church. I recently read a biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who's one of the dissident theologians who countered Hitler. And it's a terrifying story in the 1930s how Hitler tried to co-opt the church and to appear as if he was sympathetic to Christian doctrine, when in fact we know that if anything he was an atheist and someone who had a bizarre affinity for the occult. And today, sadly, we're seeing a similar reality and a similar trend play out in Russia. Vladimir Putin has often lamented the collapse of the Soviet Union. He said that this was a national tragedy. So instead of rejoicing at the fact that the world's one of the greatest engines of terror in history collapsed in 1991, Putin is now urging Russians to idolize Joseph Stalin as a great leader, a man who starved to death anywhere between 6 and 10 million Ukrainians. And sadly, he's investing a huge amount of money in also destabilizing Western democracies. And this was, again, confirmed by Dan Coats, the former Republican senator of Indiana, who's now the director of national intelligence. So we are witnessing what Ukraine's president, Peter Petro Poroshenko, has called a struggle between life and death, between civilization and barbarism. And we need to really denounce this trend and to stand up for a culture of life. We know that St. John Paul II, who was very familiar, having grown up in Poland, he knew very well the culture of death that he saw in the Warsaw Pact. And as he began his tenure as the Pope of Rome, he had to witness the severe persecution of the Roman Catholic Church in his native Poland. We're now seeing where weaponry, whether North Korea or Russia, has become our new mammon. We're seeing nations that worship power for power's sake, and weaponry is becoming the new god. And so we really need to, especially in this time of Great Lent, a time of atonement, we need to think long and hard about our values, our human rights, our commitment to freedom and democracy, and our willingness to defend those rights against the forces of barbarism, whether it's Putin or white supremacists in this country, or people that somehow, for bizarre reasons, like this deranged young man in Florida, was attracted to white supremacism and neo-Nazi philosophy. We need to do a better job of educating our children about our history, whether in Ukraine or in Eastern Europe or in this country. And we need to defend the human rights and democracy against the forces of evil. So as I only have a few minutes left, again, I wanted to thank our friends here at Winds of Change for this opportunity to share with you some of the bleak history, but also some of the joyful history, the recent history of a country of Ukraine that has gone through this wonderful revival, a revolution of dignity. And we're very proud of the Ukrainian Catholic University that has been an engine of change, has actually built a new culture of life in Ukraine, and has worked to introduce strong business ethics, political ethics, and a sense of social responsibility instead of social plunder. For those of you who are inspired by anything you heard today, I'm only scratching the surface of what's happened in Ukraine. So I want to thank you again for listening this afternoon. But I want to urge you to visit ucef.org. That's ucharlieedwardfrank.org. If you're inspired by what you've heard, if you're inspired by what you're reading, please make an online contribution today or visit a Ukrainian Catholic church to be inspired by what's happening here. I'm Alex Kuzma with the Ukrainian Catholic Education Foundation, sitting in for Father Anthony. Thank you so much. God bless all of you. Please pray for Ukraine. Pray for the United States of America.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. Let time.